So today we'll hear about two very, very primal tree personalities. You cannot actually go to see them. We can see up here on the wall the trees that are still present here. Some of them, people say, local people say they date very, very back. They date, their age is very, very old. And some of them, they say, go right back to the time of Krishna himself. And this is a very mysterious subject. One day I went to, actually I was talking to with Madhava Baba again. And I said to him, do you know of any old trees that come from Krishna's time? And he said, the tree at Vrindakund is about, they have calculated it is about 3,000 years old. So that's a very old tree. And so I said, do you know any that come from Krishna's time? Just as the way you might say, do you know the way to Vrindavan from here? In a very matter-of-fact way. And he looked at me and he said, that's a very long time. And all of a sudden I realized, oh yes, that's a very long time, 5,000 years, to say that a tree has existed for such a long time. It's quite uncommon. Trees that have existed in existence for 5,000 years generally are considered one of the wonders of the world, and people go to places where they are to see them. So some people say this tree or that tree dates back from Krishna's time, but certainly the trees exist at places where very astonishing and wonderful pastimes took place. But these two trees that I will speak of today, you cannot go and see them. Because right there in Krishna's presence, they were transformed. So, some people may be able to guess who I'm speaking of. When I was thinking of what pastimes to tell, another interesting thing that struck me was when I was wandering around looking for information about trees, just like sometimes somebody's looking for something, but they don't realize the significance of what they're looking for. So it's like if you're asking people, do you know where such and such a street is? But we are not actually looking for the street. You're looking for somebody's house on that street who you want to visit. So similarly, I was asking again with Madhava Baba about the trees. Can you tell me something about these trees? And he said to me, there is a university in Delhi. It has a very excellent botanical section. You can go there and find out everything that you need to know about trees. And all of a sudden I thought, actually that's not quite the answer I was expecting. I didn't expect to find out what the tree, what type of tree, how old it was. Of course that information is relevant. But that actually suddenly seemed to go cold. That wasn't what I was looking for. So again I tried, and then he suggested this tree, this is Chirgat, Krishna did this pastime there, this is another tree. And suddenly it dawned on me that I wasn't actually asking about trees, I was asking about pastimes. What took place here? This tree marks the spot where Krishna performed some activity. So please tell me about the activities of Krishna. So really what I was interested in, or what I was discovering, was another angle in which to approach Krishna's pastimes. So when thinking about how to approach Krishna's pastimes for the retreat, I thought the most prominent tree in my understanding is this tree on the bottom at the end, the Kaliyagat tree, which we will hear about also. But then I thought, before that tree, before Krishna jumped from that tree into the Jamuna, there were two other trees who were very, very prominent. And those two trees, they were residing in Gokul. Just imagine what you would have to do to be born as a tree in Vrindavan, in Krishna's home, in his backyard, so to speak. One would think that you would have to be immensely pious to get such an opportunity. One would have to do so much meditation and prayer, and really one would have to be very special. But these two trees are strikingly, the personalities who were born into these trees weren't acting in that manner. In fact, they were acting in a most contradictory way. They were sporting in the waters of the Gandaki, the Ganga, near Mount Kailash, with beautiful young demigoddesses. and they were having so much fun, and they were drinking and drinking and flirting and playing, and they were so intoxicated and so drunk and so caught up in their love sports that when Narada Muni came there, he saw them. They were not even dressed, and he saw them drunken and misbehaving in this way, and he recognized these were the two sons of Kuvera. How could they have got dropped to such a degraded position that they're acting like this? And the young women who were present, as soon as they saw that a sadhu had come, they immediately ran to the shore of the lake and grabbed their clothes and covered themselves in great haste and embarrassment. But these two young men were so drunk, they didn't even do any kind of response, any civil response to Narada Muni's presence. So he became angry with them. He said, look at you. Look at this. What is this? You have become so wealthy. You have so much wealth, so much prestige, so many things that you have become so intoxicated that you do not even cover your bodies in front of a saint. And so he spoke to them some very strong words about the dangers. And Srila Prabhupada also emphasizes the points that he makes about the dangers of wealth. And then he proceeds to glorify the values of poverty, because he says that a poverty-stricken man, not glorifying poverty because it is pleasant, but glorifying it because one who's suffering in poverty knows what poverty is like. They have some empathy for others who are suffering, so their heart can become soft and they can feel consideration for others who are similarly suffering. But a person who's very wealthy, who's very prestigious, they have a very hardness of heart that disallows this process to take place. And a poor man will easily let a saintly person into his house because he doesn't have anything to steal, he doesn't have anything to lose. If he listens to the words of a sadhu, he may go up. Whereas a wealthy man feels very threatened because he thinks, if I hear these words of renunciation, that I should give up everything, that this is all maya, my attachment to my family and my household and all of my opulences, then this will be some disturbance to my mind. No, let him, give him some money at the door, he can go somewhere else. So a wealthy person will not have the same ears to hear as a poor person. So speaking these words in front of these two very fallen souls, Narada Muni said that, I now curse you, that you should both become trees, because trees also stand naked. You're standing without any clothes, so become trees in the darkness of ignorance. But he said, because a saintly person's curse is also, we know, very favorable. So he said to them that while you stand, you will stand for 100 years of the demigods. That's a very long time, because I think 1 day of our time is 6 months. I'm sorry, 1 day of the demigods is 6 months of our time. So this was happening in a previous millennium to when Krishna was appearing in Gokul. And he said, you will stay like this for 100 years, just standing, but I will give you one blessing. You will not forget what took place and caused this to happen. Now just imagine what a blessing that would be. Of course, it would be a blessing in disguise for us. It would be very painful. But if we could understand why we're in the awkward positions that we find ourselves in our mind and our body or our circumstances or life, if we could understand it and accept it, and then think, yes, actually, this is a punishment. It's being given to me as a punishment, not a situation of enjoyment, that I should have all the fun in the world and I'm so frustrated because I can't get my needs met. But rather we look at it in a different way, in a sobering way. So he wanted them to see like that. And he said to them, after 100 years, standing as trees, you will have the good fortune to be liberated from your very, very, very uncomfortable. Imagine, you just stand there. You can't do anything. You can't even scratch your back. You know, when you wake up in the morning, immediately you stretch your body. When you're sitting and you're uncomfortable, you move. So many things that we just don't even notice that we do with our body to make ourselves more comfortable. They cannot do anything like that. They just have to stand and think of what they did for such a long time. And in this process, they became very much benefited. And Krishna, as we know, was very, very naughty on that particular day. He woke up, he was sleeping, and Mother Yasoda was very carefully churning the butter. Now, she churned the butter not because she didn't have anyone else to do it, but in her deep love, her complete deep love for Krishna, she thought, actually, none of the maidservants churn the butter nicely enough. I should churn the butter. And so she was singing so many sweet songs of Krishna's pastimes, and she was churning the butter very, very nicely. And she was thinking ahead, the yogurt in this pot has come from selected cows. Very, very, very special cows who've been given special grass. And all of this milk is just meant for Krishna's pleasure. And sometimes someone may say, why did Mother Yasoda leave Krishna half-fed and run to the kitchen? Was she a overzealous housewife? Did she think that actually this is a very, you know, this will be a waste of some money if this milk boils over, so just one second, I'll take care of the kitchen dealings? No, because everything that is done in Raj is for Krishna's pleasure. So Mother Yasoda was thinking ahead what he would eat later in the day, and she had made this milk pot very special plan for that, for sweets for him. So she ran to fix that up and came back. So this, the Acharya Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, is ununderstandable to one who is not immersed in this Vatsalya Prem for Krishna. I will not be able to understand the depth of the love that motivates her to even leave Krishna in order to serve Krishna. But Krishna took it in a different way, and he became very angry, a little boy. And he became so angry, and different acharyas give us different insights into what he did next. And some say that the first thing he did was he went into the milk room where they kept all the butter, all the pots of milk and yogurt and so on and so forth. And he took something from all of them, therefore making them all impure, unsuitable to be used, and knocked some over and broke some and made a big mess in there. And then he came out and found himself a stone, and then he smashed the pot that the butter was being churned in, and then he purposefully walked in it, because you can imagine if you walk on the ground, say they're serving prasadam and there's some oily patch, and you walk in it and you walk downstairs, and oily marks come all over the rest of the walkway. So he walked in the butter and got his little feet all greasy and stomped around, and then he walked through the house and he stomped around and he made a terrible mess. And then after he had done all of this, he had done so many naughty things, then he took by himself some of the butter and yogurt and he went to the grinding mortar and he sat on the grinding mortar and began to feed the monkeys. But all the time looking behind him, just in case his mother was coming. And Mother Yasoda returned and she saw all of this and she thought, what has happened? And she looked around and then she couldn't see her son. And she saw the big rock that he had used to break the pot. And she thought, he's very naughty. I have to teach him something, because who will marry him when he grows up? Who will marry if he's never taught any right and wrong? And he can't, he's not responsible. Who will want a son-in-law like this? Who will give their daughter to such a boy? So I have to teach him everything. I have to teach him. So much responsibility. He's so naughty. So off she went, and she found herself, first of all, a broom or a stick. And she was looking for him here and there. And finally, she came outside and she saw him sitting with his back towards her, feeding the monkeys very happily. And now the monkeys had had enough, and even the monkeys didn't want any more. And Krishna was so pleased with himself. And his mother decided, I'll sneak up very quietly behind him and I'll catch him. He's such a naughty boy. And she came sneaking behind him, and as we know, he jumped off when he saw her coming, and he ran this way and that way, and she ran after him. And he did some quick negotiations whilst also, as we know, rubbing his eyes so tears would come. Sanatana Goswami said maybe he rubbed his eyes because tears were coming. Or maybe he rubbed his eyes so she would feel very sorry for him. Or maybe he rubbed his eyes so faking that tears were coming, so that she would definitely not punish him. And she was saying things to him, "You naughty boy, you're such a naughty boy. Why have you done this?" And he started saying, "Mother, mother, you can catch me if you throw away your stick." And she was saying, "Why should I throw away my stick? If you didn't want me to have a stick, why did you break all the pots?" And he's saying, "No, no, I'll be very good if you throw away your stick." And finally she decided he shouldn't actually be made to be so frightened. So she put down the stick and then she caught him. And as we know, she tied him up to the grinding mortar. And after she had done that, and that also, of course, is a fascinatingly endearing pastime, because Krishna, he refused to be tied. And she took the rope from the house, the silken rope, and tried to tie him around his waist, and he refused to be tied. So she bought other ropes, and she bought other ropes, and she bought so many ropes. And all the ladies in the village were laughing and laughing to watch this extraordinary spectacle, because they were commenting, "Look, your boy is very mysterious. This morning you took a beautiful gold waistband and you tied it around his delicate little waist and you tied it on and you put it on his waist. Now you've taken all the ropes in your house and the ropes haven't got any shorter and his waist hasn't got any bigger. And still, all these ropes, you can't actually tie them. Maybe he doesn't want to be tied." And Yasoda said, "I don't care if he doesn't want to be tied. He's going to be tied. He has to learn right from wrong. I'm going to teach him a lesson." And so she begged, and everyone bought their ropes. And so many ropes were bought, and everyone was watching, and she couldn't tie them. And then after some time they were laughing and they went to their homes. And Mother Yasoda sat down to actually rest because she was so tired from all of this endeavor. But she was determined to tie up her boy. And again she got up. And when she got up after her rest and tried again to tie them, when no one was there, the ropes just miraculously tied around his waist and she had caught him. And then she tied him to the wooden, big wooden grinding mortar and said, "You stay here now. And I'm going inside to continue with some household duties and I'll come back." And she told some of the young boys, "You stay here and watch over him. Make sure he's good." So she went. And Krishna was looking and he saw these two trees. And looking at these trees are described what they were looking like. "From a distance, Krishna saw the two trees connected at the root." They were two trees, but they were twin trees, not two separate trees in that sense. Similarly, a student will understand that Prakriti, material nature, and Purusha, the Supreme Lord, exist from one source. So these two trees were standing there. They were twin trees, like Nakul and Sahadev. They are compared. "As a great king has the qualities of valor and achievement, and as a mountain range possesses steadiness, these two trees displayed an abundance of natural opulences." So they were beautiful trees. They were trees that everybody admired in the backyard, courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. And Krishna started crawling towards them. And first of all, it was very extraordinary that he could knock over the grinding mortar in such a way that he could crawl, because he was a very tiny baby. And if you take a young child and you tie them up somewhere, they will pull and pull maybe, and they will make some loud noise, but they can't pull the door off a room, they can't pull down a tree, they can't do anything like that. They can just make some disturbance and let you know they don't like the fact that they're being contained. But Krishna, very expertly, he toppled over the wooden grinding mortar and he crawled with the grinding mortar behind him. And he saw the two trees and he went straight through the middle of these two trees, you can imagine, very close together. And he crawled right through and the grinding mortar became empowered by him. And he crawled a little further and it pushed. And it's interesting because in the Bhagavatam it describes that the trees fell down. But Srila Kavi Karanpur describes this pastime a little differently. He describes that from the trees emerged these two great personalities. And later, the trees fell down. because these two personalities were existing in the form of trees. And these two personalities, as we know, were Nalakuvera and Manigriva. So they both emerged from the trees, and they were beautiful, shining, handsome personalities, young men, demigods. And Krishna is sitting there, tied to the grinding mortar, looking at them. And they're looking back at him with their hands folded, now completely understanding their constitutional position. And they offer very nice prayers to Krishna. And these prayers are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the acharyas have given their comments to embellish the words of the Bhagavatam with their own realizations. So when we read their prayers, at the end of their prayers, they pray to Krishna, please, we want that from now on, our words will only speak of you. And our mind will only think of you. And our actions will only be to glorify you. And Krishna in the Bhagavatam it describes, he accepted their prayers. And he responded to their prayers. And he assured them that never again would they fall down. And then these two great personalities, they disappeared. They entered into the heavenly planets and disappeared. And Krishna had given them full assurance that they would be able to get what they wanted. Your desires will be fulfilled and you will not fall down. And then there's Krishna and he's smiling as these great personalities from the higher planets are offering all these exalted prayers to him. He's smiling, thinking that here I am, I'm tied to the grinding mortar, I can't go anywhere. I'm bound and I have liberated you. And the interesting part is, and we meditate on this every and when we sing the Dhammadarastikam, we meditate on this in the seventh verse. Kuverat majo badha murtyaiva yadvat, twayam mochito bhakti bado krito cha, tata prema bhaktim svakam me prayacha, na mokshe graho me sti damudareha. So I don't want, they didn't want moksha. They wanted seva. And Krishna gave them that. So we pray that tata prema bhaktim, that same prema bhakti that you gave to them, and they were so fallen. Just think, what did they do? They didn't do anything good. They didn't do anything. They were just drunk. They didn't even approach a sadhu. They were just drinking and sporting and wasting their time. But a sadhu approached them. And when a sadhu approached them, he made the adjustment to correct their mentality so that they became eligible to receive this prema bhakti. And part of that receptivity that was required for them meant they had to stand in this condemned position of trees for a certain amount of time in order to purify their consciousness so they would understand their mistake. I have taken the enjoyment of this world as my pleasure when my real pleasure can only come from lovingly serving Krishna. So they accepted their purification, they became purified, and then they disappeared. And Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men heard a tremendous crash and they came running. As you can imagine, they were horrified. What has happened? Is this a thunderbolt? Has hit our house? Something terrible has happened. And they came and they saw these huge trees lying on the ground. And Krishna sitting there, smiling, with the wooden grinding mortar, topsy-turvy beside him. And they all tried to speculate on what had taken place. What has happened to this boy? First Nanda Maharaj thought, what kind of a mother would tie her son to a grinding mortar like this and allow him to be placed in such danger? What kind of motherly love is this? And the cow and the little boy said, no, 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 actually I'll tell you what happened. And they explained it all. And Krishna pulled the thing and it came through the two trees and the trees fell down. These big, and the men thought, yes, they're little children. They have some kind of a yes. And they pacified the boys. But nobody could actually understand what had taken place. And then Nanda Maharaj, Srila Jiva Goswami describes that Nanda Maharaj, he untied Krishna from the grinding mortar. And in his Gopal Champu, he describes how He was so upset with Mother Yasoda. He took baby Krishna inside, and Krishna ran to his arms, and he picked him up, and he took him inside. And he didn't even say anything to Mother Yasoda. He was so upset. He didn't even talk to her. Sometimes it is said this is the last stage of anger, when you don't even say anything. First you may chastise someone very loudly, but when you're so angry, you don't even want to look at them. You don't have anything to do with them. So he came inside and he took Krishna, and Krishna said, I just want to stay with you, Baba. I don't want to go to Maya. I don't want to go back to her. She's so cruel. She's done this to me. I don't want to go back to her. And Mother Yasoda's heart was very, 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 very broken. And she went to her room and she was crying, and Krishna wouldn't go to her. And Mother Rohini came. And Rohini saw that Mother Yasoda was feeling so much Vatsalya Prem in this mood of separation, that Rohini Devi went and she spoke to Krishna and said, you should go to your mother. No, 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 I don't like my mother. I don't want to see my mother. And I'll stay with you, Baba. And Andamard, yes, you stay with me. And then Rohini Devi said, but your mother is crying and she is about to die. And then he goes, oh, Maya, Maya. He jumped off his father's lap and ran again to his mother. So these are the loving moods between Krishna and his devotees who love to serve him in Vatsalya Ras. And the Bhagavatam begins with this, because this is the speciality of Gokul, of Vrindavan here. There are two planes of the spiritual world, the upper plane, Goloka Vrindavan, and then it appears here in this material, manifest in the material world as Gokul. And there are some specialities of this Gokul Leela. And one of them is that Krishna appears as a tiny baby for the pleasure of Yasoda and Nanda. So there are some specialities that make the devotees love the leela that takes place in the material world equally as Krishna's eternal nitya leela in the spiritual world, because of these specialities. So Krishna in this way, he went on with his pastimes. And Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, Srila Jiva Goswami also explains to us, they had their desire fulfilled. And they appeared in Krishna Leela as two poets or reciters. They were called Madhukant and Snigdhakant. They were brothers. And they would sing to Nanda Maharaj every day. They would sing so many beautiful pastimes of Krishna. So for eternally, that became their position of service to Krishna. That they used their words to glorify him. They used their minds only to think of his beautiful pastimes. And they shared these with the residents of Vrindavan. And all the residents of Vrindavan were very grateful to accept the service rendered by these two personalities. So the trees. I will read you a little bit more about the trees. When the residents of Vrindavan came to see the trees, they were trying to understand what had happened, how the trees had fallen. They thought that perhaps the reason that they had fallen was that they had been pushed by the wind. Or they thought that perhaps the reason that they had fallen was because they had rotted at their roots. This might have been a reason that they had fallen down. After speaking, the demigods proceeded northward and disappeared, and then the two Arjuna trees crashed to the ground. Their falling made a terrible sound that deafened all the ladies. When they saw the huge fallen trees, they thought perhaps Mother Earth had offered dandavats to Krishna with the arms of these tree trunks. And the split open trees looked like the gaping mouths of the lower planetary system. Its two branches appeared like two huge snakes rising up and desiring to go in different directions. The two trees seemed like the dead bodies of the demons Madhu and Kaitava thrown on the ground by the Lord himself. And when the Brajavasis found Krishna, he appeared calm, fearless, and free from danger. Oh, what is this, they said. How have these huge Arjuna trees suddenly fallen without being pushed down by the wind? In a second, they could have crashed and killed Krishna. But Krishna just stands peacefully between them, looking as fresh as a newly formed rain cloud. It is our good fortune that nothing has happened to him. For a long time these two trees have stood here, not troubling others. But now perhaps, due to old age, their roots have become rotten, and they have toppled over from the weight of their leaves and branches. But upon closer examination, we see that this is not the reason, because the roots, branches, leaves and everything are all fresh and hard. In various ways, the Vrajabasis tried to evaluate the situation. So in this way, they tried to understand what was actually taking place with these trees. How had this taken place? But because of the intensity of their love for Krishna, they could not accept that this was due to his Aishwarya, or his power, that he had the strength to do something like this. But Gavikarnpur and the demigods themselves praised Krishna because he was so powerful that he could empower even the grinding mortar to do this. Just imagine a wooden mortar and the rope, he empowered the rope, what to speak of his own empowerment, because the rope would snap, the grinding mortar would break with the force of hitting these trees. But Krishna, he wanted, just like an easy act, he wanted to show the residents of Vrindavan something that they would find very amazing, but it would not in any way confuse their love for Krishna. And we see this when Mother Yasoda was binding Krishna and she was when she looked in his mouth and she saw the universe, she was thinking, am I mad? No. Am I sleeping? No, I'm awake. It's not a dream. Are the demigods making some mystery? No. Why would the demigods bother with a woman like me? Then maybe, she thought, maybe this is the mystic power of my son. And this was just before the trees fell. And then she thought for a moment very carefully on this, and she thought, no, it can't be the mystic power of my son. My son cries when there's lightning outside, and he runs and hops into bed with me. And when I ask him to pick up something heavy, he waves his arms and as if he can't do it. And he's so dependent on me. How could he have any mystic power? No. And she immediately dismissed that one. And then she thought, because I can't understand what it is, I should pray to Lord Vishnu, because he protects our family and he's given me such a wonderful son. So I should pray to God that he should protect my son always and protect me and protect my intelligence and please protect all the residents of Vrindavan. And she didn't become even slightly shaken into another mood or mentality. So this is the pure love of the residents of Vrindavan. And by hearing about this, gradually it creates an impression in our heart. And we begin to understand what love really is and what love really isn't. And then gradually, as we become purified by the processes of Krishna consciousness, as the purification takes place, then arises in us a desire for this, to actually taste love. And love, as Prabhupada one time said to Upendra Prabhu when he was thinking of marriage, and he was saying, I want to get married. Can you suggest anything? And Prabhupada walked to the window in the apartment where he was saying, and he looked out the window and he pointed to the women walking up and down on the street. And he said, pick a woman, any woman. And Upendra was shocked. And he said to Prabhupada, but... You know, we're talking about Vedic yagyas and so forth. Prabhupada saying, just find a woman. And Upendra was like flabbergasted and he said, but Prabhupada, I thought that at least there should be some love. And Prabhupada looked at him penetratingly and he said, love? Love is meant for Krishna. There is no love in this world. We should understand that. Love is meant for Krishna. Thank you very much.